Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is
me. A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact scenario.
I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my
onto
friend?
A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
Good morning. This is Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 FM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Man, we got a great show logged up for you here. In addition to, of course, the usual nonsense hosted by me, Michael Kasser, you're also going to get Jay Garman is going to come on, give us last week's geek trivia question. And then right after that, we've got Rob Green from Dyson Corporation. He's going to talk to us about Dyson, about innovation, and about how kids in Chicago have been winning Dyson Innovation Contests lately. So this is going to be cool. I'm excited to hear about that. You will be amazed at some of the things that these kids have come up with in the Chicago area, but also, too, I think you're going to be impressed by some of the things that Dyson does to support innovation and why they do it. So Rob Green's going to be on in just a little bit. After that, of course, I would not leave the show without hopefully having a little bit of time for some cool sights of the week. I got some good ones and a podcast only song of the week as well. Although honestly, it'll probably just be a song of the week. I think we're just going to call it a song of the week this week rather than a podcast song of the week. It's all radio ready and queued up, so we got some good stuff. And there's been some good stuff and exciting stuff going on in tech news this last week. Man, you may have been affected by many, many of these things. First, there was the Barnes & Noble security breach. Yes, somebody broached Barnes & Noble security. Now, this was not a, and I'm using air quotes here with my fingers, this was not a hack attack, so to speak. What they had done was a very old school type of hack where they went in and actually replaced the card readers, the credit card readers at a number of Barnes and Nobles in the Illinois area, around the Chicagoland area. And because of that, now the card reader would still operate for the clerk. So you'd bring your credit card, you'd slap it through there, or your ID card, you know, your bank ATM and thing, slap it through there. It'd go to the credit card company and all that. But what it was also doing was recording that number, recording possibly even your personal ID number, and keeping that for the person who was interested in using it for illegal purposes. Now, of course, there's a lot of response out to that. We've talked many, many times about what you need to do in circumstances like this. Obviously, change your password right away. If you've got an ATM, go and get that thing changed if that's what you use as a debit card. If you've got a credit card, make sure that you're watching the charges that are coming through. Even better, if you really, you're positive, you went and you bought something at one of the Barnes & Nobles that was impacted, why not just go, you know, call your credit card company and say, hey, there's no bad charges right now, but I want to change my card. I want to swap it. They will do that for you. You can just call them and say, I need a new card. There was this breach at Barnes & Noble's. Please replace it and keep us both secure. They will do that for you. That is no problem. So there's a lot of things that you can do, but that was kind of crazy. Now, that was in the Illinois area. That was very local. That was very, current for us. But also, too, South Carolina. Do you know anybody in South Carolina? Did you live in South Carolina at some point? Well, gosh, you should be careful, because approximately 3.6 million social security numbers and almost 400,000 credit card and debit card numbers that were belonging to South Carolina taxpayers. So that means not only if you live there, but if you did any work there, your information might have been on a server that was hacked and breached by an international hacker, according to the state's Department of Revenue. Now, to their credit, they claim that all but 16,000, a mere 16,000 credit and debit card numbers were fully encrypted. The rest, though, for some reason, were, I guess, in plain text. I don't understand or know really what reason or why any organization at this point is keeping any critical information in plain text, but, you know, our government tends to kind of be a little goofy about stuff like that, and there you go. So that's out there. Now, what is also interesting, though, too, is you got South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley knows, she says, where this attack came from. She knows who did it, or she doesn't know the name of the person. They're still undergoing investigation, but she doesn't want to tell people what country this attack originated from because it might hurt the law enforcement investigation. And she said, and this is her words, she quotes, says, I quote, she wants the hacker slammed to the wall. she said, we want to make sure everybody understands that our state, meaning South Carolina, will respond with a big, large-scale plan that is somewhat unprecedented to take care of this problem. So I'm thinking, you know, SEAL Team 12, I guess, is the one that's going to go in here and slam this guy to the wall. You know, we've seen repeatedly over the years many of these hacks. We've seen response to these hacks, federal government motions. We've seen... many times them get caught and captured. And we were just talking three, four weeks ago to the CEO of Malwarebytes about some of these actions. And also too, to the chief inspector general for the United States. And they all kind of say the same thing, that it's like, you know, you can pin these guys to the wall. You can catch individuals, but it's kind of like, you know, smashing cockroaches. You can keep running around your apartment and smashing those cockroaches, but every one you kill, there's another dozen that's in the walls somewhere that are coming out. And what you really need to do is take care of the source of the issue, which is that if it's easy enough or profitable enough to do these types of activities, people are going to keep doing it, particularly from other countries where it's a little more difficult to knock them down, where it's a little more difficult to find them and to enforce any sort of regulation against them. It's somewhat of a losing battle. You really need to protect this thing on the front end. You know, it's kind of like, you know, put the condom on, don't try to cure the AIDS. You know, it's where you enforce and where you put your efforts. I think you're much better off working on the prevention side of things. You know, certainly you want to go after people when this has happened, but you gotta, saying you're gonna pin somebody to the wall, it makes everybody feels good, but at the end of the day, have you really accomplished that much? I guess we'll find out. We'll see. We'll see in a few months. Along the same lines, now this is not as horrifying, but maybe it was to some of you. Did you go on Reddit Monday morning and realize that you couldn't go on Reddit? Or do you use Foursquare, Minecraft, HipChat, Read It Later, or now it's called Pocket? I use that constantly, and I did have some problems actually Monday morning. My usual Monday morning routine is I get up early, I read the news, I read some articles I've got that I've saved over the week in Pocket while I'm eating my my oatmeal, and I get on with my day. And that was not possible. That was not possible Monday morning. Why? Why? Because Amazon Web Services had another outage. Now, this one, they've identified the reason for it. They said that it was caused by a memory leak, as well as a failure in their monitoring alarm. So you've got, the perfect storm of problems. And this seems to be happening whenever Amazon has an outage. They're claiming that it's really this kind of, overwhelming issue of falling dominoes of faults. And maybe that's true. It may be that we're at such a point these days with technology that really is what it takes to have an outage of this sort, is you have to have these falling dominoes of problems. So apparently the outage started at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard, and it was a memory leak, which meant that the servers the memory, it's just like on your computer, you can think of it how when you run too many things, you know, you've got Internet Explorer open and you've got Microsoft Outlook and you're running Minecraft in the background and maybe you're also doing a backup on some file. At some point, the computer, the server, the whatever it is that you're working on, the amount of available memory, that's the random access memory, not your hard drive space, gets used up. And that means that it can't start new processes, and the processes that it has running are going to take longer because it's got a very limited amount of resources available to it in order to accomplish the jobs that it's trying to do. Now, a server will typically have alerts and monitors configured, and you'll even have systems can set up external to the server, which will also alert you when these servers are going slow. Now, those not only did you have a memory leak, which caused an issue, but then you also had a monitoring and alarm system, which failed. And it just didn't happen. Now, they claim that this week they're going to begin deploying a fix for the memory leak issue, and that they've already planned to deploy a monitoring system that's going to alarm them if this specific memory leak or another one arises in any of its production servers. So, you know, supposedly, yeah, we'll never see another Amazon Web Service outage again, right? Let me tell you, I'm not going to wait underwater for that one to happen. One thing that I know a lot of people were waiting for, hey, how do you like this segue? is Microsoft coming out with Windows 8. Yes, they did it. There's the Windows 8 RT, which is the tablet version, and Microsoft Surface, which is some hardware to run Windows RT. That went on sale, supposedly to cheering crowds in Boston. People were very excited. About 100 people were waiting outside for this. But you can also, too, go online. You can check and see if your current machine is ready and able to be upgraded to Microsoft 8. And if you're willing to take that plunge, you can do it, I believe, for less than $40. You can download the Windows 8. I don't know what the various flavors are. I know they have a pro flavor and an enterprise flavor for businesses, things like this. But it sounds like they've streamlined it a bit. I remember in the Vista days, it seemed like there was 15 different versions and flavors you could get. I think they've narrowed that down to about 3 or 4. I did, and you can go into Microsoft. If you go to Microsoft.com, you can find the evaluation tool. You download that. It's about 5 meg, and it'll run. It'll tell you what applications will carry over and if your machine is ready to be upgraded and so on, and then give you a link, of course, to download the software. What I find interesting, I think, is a great, great move, makes it much more likely that you're going to get some adoption of this, is that they've configured it in such a way that even though it's a very, at least visibly, you know, on the surface, pun intended, change in the operating system is very, very clear, that underlying it is enough similarity that they've worked out a migration plan for you, that your applications, your files, your folders, the way that you've worked up to this point is not going to be demolished. Now, there's some applications that they claim just won't work. You can't bring them up, or that you're going to have to reinstall in the new system. I am not sure what it is about specific ones that make that happen. I know when I ran the analysis on my machine, there weren't a lot that wouldn't come over. Camtasia was one that I use all the time. That's a fairly high-end screen capture and screen recording application. It's also a video editing application that lets you create how-tos and videos and things like that online. That one was one that I would have to reinstall if I was going to do this. And there were a few other ones too. Nothing too surprising, but it's worth it if you're thinking about it. At least go online there, take a look, download the software, and find out if your machine is actually ready for it. Now, people have had some rather mixed reviews of Windows 8. I've heard the Windows fanboys really saying they like it a lot. They think it's a great move forward. Everyone has kind of said, you know, it's just a touch rough. It's a little bit different. It's a little bit of a change. They don't have some of the bugs and some of the rough edges ironed out yet, but it's a great step in the right direction. And I've even heard a few people say, not just one, but a couple of these pundits and reporters say, you know, this is a nice step up from the iOS, from the iPad operating system, and makes sense for how people use technology today, particularly using it on the Surface, using it on a tablet environment, because it is really focused on touch and swiping and using your screen in that way that we've become accustomed to with a tablet. It's a little different when people are reporting on the usage of it on a PC, and that may be a result of that, that it is truly designed to be more of a tablet operating system. A lot of people, in fact, are saying, in fact, Charles King, who's an analyst at Pund.it, has said that he just doesn't believe that Windows 8 is going to be enough to turn PC sales around. I have to agree with him. I don't believe that we're going to see a big burst in new PC sales because of this. I disagree with him that he says that it could even hurt PC sales. I don't believe that that's the truth. I think we're going to see a lot of people now are finally familiar and comfortable with Windows 7. I think we're going to see a lot of people focused on staying with Windows 7 and then eventually perhaps starting to adopt Windows 8 if it proves to be something better than Windows Vista was. I don't know if you remember Windows Vista, but when that first came out, that was a mess. Nobody was happy with that. And hopefully that doesn't happen with Windows 8, although the common it's kind of like Star Wars movies. You always want to, Star Trek movies, you always want to skip the odd number ones, every other one. They're just never quite as good, the even numbered ones. And this is one of the even numbered, Windows versions. So this may be a good one to skip. And you know what we're going to do? We are going to bring on our good friend Jay Garman here and see if we can get through to him. Now, he's out and about today. I do have his right number, though, unlike the last time that we had to do this. We'll see if we're able to get through to him. And maybe not. Maybe not. I'll have to verify and double check that I've got that right number. It sure looks right to me. Yeah, you know, we always have so much fun.
You've reached Jay Garman.
Oh, my gosh. Well, hey, at least we had the right number this time. I'm excited about that. That's not too bad. That's better than a lot of other days when we have not had the right number. So I tell you what we're going to do instead. I am going to take us and give us some IDs and spots and promos and all that other good stuff that we got to do around here. And I want you to listen to them closely. There's just a lot of really great stuff that we do here on the radio. There's a lot of great organizations around us that are supportive of the mission here, and you're going to hear from a couple of them right now. And I want to mention to you too that, you know, you could be one of these groups yourself. You don't have to be local. Certainly our program gets airplay all over the country. I've got messages and notes from people in St. Louis and Louisville, Atlanta, out in Seattle, and on the East Coast too, Baltimore and elsewhere. If you want to get your message out and support a great organization, this is a way to do it. WRLR is community radio. We are a 501c3. We are not for profit, and that means that also too, anything you do with us is fully tax deductible. But hey, I'm going to throw a couple of things at you right now, and make sure you stick around. Come back to us in just a minute. I'm going to bring on Rob Green from Dyson Technologies. So stay tuned. You're listening to Tech Talk.
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
The Round Lake Area Public Library is a proud sponsor of WRLR. The library provides current information, formal education support, independent learning opportunities, and life enrichment materials to a highly diverse public by a trained team of individuals who will nurture a love for reading and learning. The Round Lake Area Public Library is located at 906 Hart Road in Round Lake and is open Monday through Sunday. The phone number is 847-546-7060. The website is rlalibrary.org. Se habla español.
Hi, this is Todd from Retro Radio, and I know retro. That's why I listen to Mark Shanahan's Doo-Wop Hour every Monday afternoon from 2 to 3. You'll hear the best in 50s doo-wop and 60s surf music. That's Mark Shanahan's Doo-Wop Hour every Monday afternoon from 2 to 3. Only on WRLR.
ATC Weggie is a proud sponsor of programming on WRLR. ATC Weggie has been providing accounting and taxation services for businesses and individuals in Lake County since 1960. They continue to provide financial services to businesses and individuals so they can meet their regulatory and tax filing requirements. ATC Weggie is located in downtown Grays Lake. For further information, their website is atcweggie.com and the phone number is 847-223-0777.
ABC Rental Center is a proud sponsor of WRLR 98.3 FM radio. ABC Rental Center has been servicing Lake County since 1976 and can handle your home project equipment rental needs. Budget rental trucks are also available. ABC Rental Center is located in the heart of Lake County, Illinois, just west of Route 83 on Rollins Road in Round Lake Beach, and is open 7 days per week. For additional information, owners Paul and Polly can be reached at 847-546-7844.
All right, we are back. This is Tech Talk on WRLR. And now, we weren't able to connect with our good friend Jay Garman, but I'm going to try us now get through to Rob Green from Dyson Corporation to talk to us about innovation and how Dyson has been doing actually quite a bit with innovation, not just in general and for themselves, but also too in the Chicago area. And the Dyson Innovation Awards were fairly recent here. I wonder if we're going to wind up 2 for 2. That is the love and joy of live radio we've got right here.
Earl Green speaking.
Ah, there he is. Good morning. Good morning. You are on Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 FM. Hey, great to hear from you. Thanks for joining us, Rob. I was just trying to tell people a little bit about you and about Dyson, but I think you're probably going to do a better job of it than I could. What is your role with Dyson? And then let's talk about why you're on here to talk with us.
Yeah, so... good morning, first of all. Thanks for having me on. My name is Rob Green. I'm a design engineer with Dyson. Been with the company for about 6 years now. And really what we want to talk about today, or the big thing to talk about today, is the James Dyson Award.
Mm, excellent, excellent. And from your accent, I can tell you're from probably the south side of Chicago, is my guess?
I'm a little bit further east than that. I'm from the southwest of England, but I've been in Chicago just under 2 years now. So, I'm a little bit further east than the south side.
Fantastic, fantastic. So you had worked with Dyson then also when you were in England, it sounds like.
Yes, yeah. That's, like I said, it was about 6 years now. I spent 4 years. Just as a general designer in their main design offices in the UK. And then we've got a very small team of engineers here in the US as well. We tend to have a couple based in any of the major markets. So there's a couple of us here in the US, there's a couple of us in Japan, and then, you know, Europe and Malaysia and, you know, various other different parts of the world, depending on, you know, how important the market is. So.
Yeah. Now, are you directly involved with, coming up with innovative technologies and working with innovation and change within Dyson? Or how did you get, I guess my question is, how did you get involved with these innovation awards and with dealing with innovation, in the public?
Well, I suppose to really start answering that, we go with how I got involved in the whole design thing anyway. So, I've always enjoyed trying to figure out how things work, basically. So even when I was younger, I liked building stuff in sort of my parents' garage, and everything from playing with, building blocks and Legos and to, pulling things apart and seeing how they work. Then as I went through school, sort of found out that you can actually do that as a job. You can spend your days building stuff, trying to work out how things work, how to make things better, drawing, designing, and coming up with new ideas and innovations. So as I sort of went through school, I found out that this was actually a job you could do. And then went off to university and sort of studied product design, which is sort of it's sort of a lighter form of engineering. So engineering is sort of split into lots of different categories, from civil and structural engineering, mechanical engineering, things like that. And what I study is more consumer goods based. So it's sort of the design of everyday appliances and things people really interact with on a more day-to-day basis than, roads, buildings, or cars. Sort of more products and household goods.
Yes.
So, I mean, that just really excited me, the fact that you can spend your time and your career basically designing things that people will go into shops and, choose, hopefully, your design or innovation over the other, ones that are out there and available. So, that's how I sort of got into it, just the excitement of being able to be, one of the lucky people who gets to design what people go out and spend their hard-earned money on, which is, at the end of the day, what it is. And, there's lots of things that people, have out there that they never actually realize that there's a designer somewhere working incredibly hard on coming up with this product, whether it's a standard pen that somebody uses every day to, the heater in their home, to their vacuum cleaner, obviously, to, the dishes and bowls they're using, the table lights, pretty much everything you have in your home, everything from, everything has been designed by a designer or an engineer somewhere.
Well, that leads me to a question too. I mean, you look at technology over the last 20 years or so, even although certainly even beyond that, and it seems, anyways, to me, not being an engineer of that sort, that the process of creating truly innovative designs, or even creating designs which would be quantifiably an improvement over prior designs, has got to be getting more and more difficult, right? Because things seem to have really progressed beyond a point where you're going to have that brilliant flash of insight that is automatically going to generate a new design which is going to be better.
That's quite true. I mean, true innovation is actually quite rare these days. Most new products are actually just iterative steps, so they're taking an existing product and just making it a little bit better, whether that's a little bit easier to use, whether it's a little bit lighter, a little bit smaller, a little bit faster, cheaper. Most new products out there are actually just an iterative step on an old product, a very small update or change. True innovation or truly new innovative products are actually quite rare.
Yep.
And part of that is, it's not an easy process to come up with a completely new idea. To truly find an unsolved problem is incredibly difficult. The other thing is, it's actually also incredibly expensive and long-winded. We at Dyson like to consider ourselves obviously a technology company, but also an innovative company. We spend a lot of time and effort on and money on our research. And, whether that's just our vacuum cleaners, which, a standard vacuum cleaner will spend about 3 years designing, which hopefully to people sounds like a lot. I mean, 3 years designing one vacuum cleaner is, to me, always seems like quite a long time. But for truly new products, like when we came up with the bladeless table fan, the bladeless fan
rack,
and we spent 4 years alone just on one part for that, which was the main impeller that draws the air through. 4 years alone just designing and developing that one part. And, you know, we do our own electric motors for some of our products, and those we've been working on for probably the best part of a decade, some of the designs of those. So true innovation, truly new design is a big investment. It's it takes a very long time, not just from the point of coming up with the idea, but working through to the point of the final actual product. So
and it seems though that and I think that's a great point of the amount of time, effort, and money that really has to go into some of these designs, which are truly innovative. But it seems that Dyson has been willing to make that investment from very, very early on in the company's history, even as those investments have increased. I mean, the fan is a great example. The fan, just clearly you look at it and you say, that's different. That's not a fan as I'm used to seeing it. You said it, they spent, 4 years designing that fan. Has that been, I'm not asking you, what's the financial status of Dyson, I guess, but in a sense, I guess I am a little bit. Has it panned out? Has that investment in innovation and that investment in the truly new way of doing the old thing been worthwhile as far as you can see, or has there been areas where it hasn't been so far?
I think the short answer is definitely yes, it has been worthwhile. I mean, the company is incredibly strong. We seem to go from strength to strength every year. And I think going back to the point of the investment in technology, the thing to remember is James Dyson is an engineer and a designer.
Mm-hmm.
That's his qualifications, and he's the owner and the founder of the company. And I think we're very lucky in the company to have a man who is also very design, innovation, and engineering centered as the owner and founder of the company, because it makes it a very technology and innovation driven company, because we've got the head man so interested in making sure that the products are innovative and groundbreaking and different, and also willing to put the put the financing and the time into developing the new idea, so I suppose taking the chances on the new innovations that might not work.
Yep.
Now, that's not to say that every single idea we've ever developed at Dyson has made it through. I mean, obviously you get those ideas that they look at the beginning, you start developing, you start testing, you start designing, and for whatever reason they don't work out. We've had, certainly in my time I've been involved in projects that haven't made it through to the market. And I think that's just natural, but it's refreshing to be in a company that's willing to invest and take the opportunities in these new technologies, and you get some great ones, like you said, like the bladeless fan, and the fact that it was probably a bit of a long shot. I mean, it's a fantastic product, but when you launch something like that, you never quite know how people are going to react to here's something that is so different. Here's a fan that has no blades, it looks nothing like what people are used to. So yeah, there's always a small element of risk, but I think because we're very lucky, because we have James, in charge of the company, who is, an excellent designer and engineer.
Is that ever an issue? I wonder. I mean, when I first saw the bladeless fan, I think that's a really good example here, because when you look at it, I got to tell you, my initial reaction was that can't possibly work. I understand it. I mean, I don't understand it, but I understood enough of the science that I heard about the engineering to say, well, that maybe it could, but. But until you actually stand in front of one and are, literally blown away by the fact, pun intended, that that this thing operates. And so while the innovation and the technology worked, and the design of it surely was something that was successful in that sense, has it achieved an adoption level, or was it a little bit too outre for people to adopt and to bring into their homes and be willing to kind of spend the money on?
No, I mean it has been very, very successful. I think your point is very true. I think a lot of people look at it and they can work out that it should work, but don't necessarily fully understand the technology behind it. But it is when you actually experience it for yourself, you know, when you look, you actually get blown away by it. It's when you actually come to experience it and see the product and use the product that you really do, you know, realize how good it is and how much of a benefit it does have. Mm-hmm. In terms of its success, it's been, well, I suppose the best measure of its success, unfortunately, is the level of imitation that it's got. You know, if it wasn't a successful product, we wouldn't be seeing quite so many copycats out there. you know, taking the basis of the technology and doing their own versions or reproductions of it. And it's unfortunate that you have these instances.
Yeah. But, well, sadly, you can't patent physics yet, you know, so...
No. But, imitation, it's a good sign of the successful product. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate, but, it does show that the product is successful and that, people like it and embrace it.
Yeah, well, and if our and not to get political here, but if our free market economy is operating the way that it should be and is relatively efficient, what that should do, of course, is spur you to additional innovations and continued growth in new areas, which is kind of what we want to see, is new cool things being brought out by our companies like Dyson, and things like that. Now, and I have to confess, I've got a Dyson vacuum cleaner. I've got I think it's a DC 07 or somewhere along those lines and things. And, it's cool. it works, it's good stuff. so I'd like to see more things like that. And of course, being a techie kind of guy myself, I love to see these new things coming around and really taking steps forward, not just in our smartphones and a new app and things like that, but really making efficient changes in the more prosaic or quotidian sort of efforts that we have, that we make every day, and making changes there, it really can change people's lives in some ways that we don't really consider in a lot of ways. You mentioned dishwashing machines as well and things like that.
Yeah, and that's something that again at the company is very important to us, is the power and the importance of innovation and engineering in new products, physical items, and we're all about trying to solve those everyday frustrations and make people's lives a little bit simpler, a little bit easier, and even if it is just domestic chores, it's something that everybody has to do. We all have to clean our houses, we have to wash our dishes and things like that, and it's all about making life as easy as possible. And some of the best designs are the ones that people don't even necessarily notice that it has made their life easier. It's just just allowed them to get on and do what they need to do. So
I should say most of us have to do things like clean our house and wash our dishes. Mr. Dyson himself, who I think is worth close to $2 billion American, is probably less likely to actually do these types of things.
Well, the interesting side story on him is he's still incredibly involved in the design and the testing process. So he does take home pretty much every prototype we produce and test them himself. So as a majority vacuum cleaner company, I'm sure he can gets around trying out all the machines in his own home. So
Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, you need that sort of connection to really have an influence over an organization of the size that Dyson is now, I would believe. And
yeah, definitely.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, it is this company. Like I said, he is incredibly involved in the design process. He still works down in our research, design, and development on a very regular basis. When I left, he was down there at least 3 days a week, working with the design teams, influencing the designs. He still has pretty much the final say over all the designs. So he's, you know, he's as involved as ever in the design process and, you know, the innovations and the technologies we're putting out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's not only involved, of course, with this company directly, but he supports innovation in all of its forms. And of course, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to speak to you was because, you know, the Dyson Foundation that he's set up sponsors the James Dyson Awards. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that and what those are.
Yeah. So we have the James Dyson Foundation, which is an engineering educational foundation. But the real thing, like I said, we want to talk about today is the James Dyson Award. Now, this is an annual design and engineering award. It's a global contest, and it's open to university-level students and graduates. You can submit a project anywhere up to 4 years after you graduate from university. Like I said, it's global. It's open to everybody from countries such as Australia, UK, Canada, France, Germany, US, obviously, Italy, Japan, Malaysia, Netherlands, sort of a large quantity of the world. Mm. And it's an industrial design award. It's just really all about encouraging and inspiring the next generation of design engineers, and also supporting students with their designs and innovations, potentially onto taking onto further onto the next level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's done is we do a sort of national national competitions, and then the finalists from the national competitions go on to the global one. Now, the international overall global prize is what's that, about $16,000 for the student, and then $16,000 for the student's university as well.
Wow.
But the particularly good thing, or the particularly great thing for us here in Chicago, is we actually had two finalists from Northwestern University.
Yes.
This one, which is obviously fantastic. I mean, Northwestern is an excellent university, and actually one of our own engineer at Dyson is a Northwestern graduate.
And I should say, as am I. I'm a Northwestern graduate myself from quite some time ago. computer science graduate, as a matter of fact.
That's fantastic. I mean, it's a university I'm finding out more and more about. The longer I'm here, but it's their engineering program is fantastic over there.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we've got two of the finalists that came through the U.S. competition were both from Northwestern. It really shows, you know, the great level of engineering and design education we have here in Chicago at the university level. And these were two really great ideas going through. One was a blind assistance technology buckle, so it was all about removing the stigma of the visually impaired cane. I'm replacing it with a belt buckle that helps the user navigate around instead of the cane by using proximity sensors and vibration.
Mm.
And the other one, which I don't mean to put any bias on this, but I particularly liked, was a human-powered refrigeration unit. So it was really designed for vaccinations in developing countries.
Yes.
Where obviously you might not have a constant power supply. And this was it was basically a wind-up design, so the operator could turn a handle, and it charged batteries were linked to a generator, which powered the fridge. So fantastic design, and also a very good idea in terms of solving a problem, and solving a very serious problem of transporting vaccinations around developing countries where, you know, you might not have a constant power supply unless you're always traveling. So
People may not realize, but that a lot of the vaccines that we have money right now, and we have support for getting vaccines to a lot of these third world countries that don't have access to this type of medication. But the big issue with it is that in the transport, the vaccines lose their effectiveness very, very rapidly if the temperature is not kept constant. And there's been a number of different ways that people have tried to address this issue, either by making the transport process itself more efficient so that things get there quicker, or even recently I've seen some research done on attempting to stabilize the vaccine compound itself so that it is not as fragile. But this, it was such a direct and relatively straightforward way to resolve this complex problem. I thought it was really fascinating, and using human energy, which you've got everywhere that these vaccines are attempting to be delivered to.
Yes, and that's exactly what I liked about it. You know, it's a very direct solution. You know, it's not an overcomplication. It's sort of what we've got, people obviously transporting it. You know, there's a source of power there, the sort of source of input to be able to, you know, power something there. You've got the human energy input. It just seemed like a very nice direct solution to this very serious problem that is quite often missed or understated. You know, we have these vaccines, we have them available, but the big problem, or one of the big costs with them, is the transport and the stabilization of them, making sure they don't go bad in the actual process of transporting them to where they're needed, and it's something that, isn't obviously so much of a, we're very lucky, it isn't so much of a problem where we are here, in the US and, where I'm from in Europe, but when you start thinking of, developing nations, it becomes a much more serious concern. You know, they can have the vaccines, but they can't necessarily transport them to where they're needed. So I thought it was a fantastic fantastic identification of a problem, and then a wonderful solution to it as well. And really, for us, or as designers and engineers, it is, like I said before, all about finding these frustrations and these issues and really working to solve them. It's one of those that the simpler, the better, almost. You know, the more direct solution it is. It's best not to overcomplicate these a lot of the time.
Yep.
Some of the best ideas are the simplest.
Yeah. You don't want to be too clever sometimes. And not to take anything away from the individuals who created the belt buckle to assist people with blindness and so on. But it's almost like a solution that's too clever for its own good. I can see having, especially if I had difficulty with my vision, I could see having a lot of consternation or an uphill battle accepting this piece of technology as truly being helpful if I'm walking in a new environment. Certainly walking around an environment I know or that I'm comfortable in, but walking around a new environment, I maybe we could talk a little bit about that, about the belt buckle. Maybe I just don't understand the buckle itself. Why was it chosen as being one of the highlighted items for innovation?
I think for us, the big thing was it sort of approached a slightly different problem. And there's many different ways of looking at the problems in the world. You know, the vaccine one is quite an easily understandable one. But I think with the blind assistance technology buckle, the problem it was tackling was more one of a social stigma. It was more of how can you help people, and how can you, sort of almost encourage people to take the help and the assistance they need when there's a medical condition or, a deterioration of something that they've been so used to and so dependent on. I mean, none of us like to accept that we are getting, that we, if in the event that we ever develop anything like this, that we need additional help, I suppose.
Yeah.
And, the use of a visually impaired, a visual impairment cane, or, a to help you is obviously quite a big stigma. You know, it's something that is immediately noticeable when you're walking down the street, and I think a lot of people potentially would become very aware that people will instantly see, you know, a cane and and attach some sort of judgment or stigma to it. Mm-hmm. So I think whether, you know, whether that's correct or not, that's a, you know, that's a thought process that unfortunately naturally goes on in people's heads.
Yeah.
So I think it was more about trying to remove that obstacle of people's perceived stigmas and comfortable level of getting the help and technology that they need,
yeah.
replacing it with something that's much more discreet and, you know, therefore much more likely to be accepted by people. So I think the problem was, the problem they addressed was a very different problem, but not any less serious. And it was more of a trying to address social stigmas and people's own personal feelings and people's own personal feelings that may hold them back from accepting help or aid that they may require, and putting it in a more discreet manner to sort of encourage people to use it.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing with this project was actually inspired by the inventor's own grandmother's recent development. So, you know, it's a much more personal level project. And I think that helps you to really understand the problems and the issues where others may not necessarily get the idea instantly.
Yep. So now what's the next step for these innovators in the process? I mean, so there'll be a, you say there's a, there's one winner chosen. Is there one winner chosen globally, or, I mean, I know there'll be, they continue with the national competitions too, right?
Yes. Yeah. So there's a national winner. And then there's, a global competition winner as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going through the final judging process at the moment, and the international winner is actually announced on the 8th of November. The national finalists were announced actually last month, and a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. And last month we announced the shortlist for the international award winners. So basically the 8th of November is the final announcement of the winners for the competition.
Excellent. And where can people find more information specifically about the Dyson Awards?
So there's actually a dedicated website for the James Dyson Award, and it's got a backlog of, or a back history of some of the other previous award winners, and there are some fantastic designs on there from previous years. And we actually launched the award globally back in 2004, so it's been running for quite a few years now. But the website is jamesdysonawards.org. So that's James Dyson Award, all is one word, and .org.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm actually just brought it up here myself online too. And yeah, you're right. There's actually you could lose some time here flipping through some of the really, really amazing innovations that have been just come up with in this current project, but then also too looking through some of the past projects as well. And I know that Dyson Dyson.com, right, is the main website for Dyson Company.
It is, yeah, and then there's, you'll be able to find links on there to the James Dyson Award and also the James Dyson Foundation, which, like I said, is our educational, engineering and education charity. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it should all be linked through if people need to find other information from that.
Beautiful. Well, Rob, I'm trying to bring us to a close here. We are right at the end of the hour. I can't tell you how much I appreciate not only your time here, but also the Dyson Foundation and the Dyson Corporation for making innovation a priority for not only themselves, but for Chicago and for the nation and for the world. I think it's a tremendous thing to do, and I'm very pleased to hear that you seem to just really enjoy the job that you're doing and the work that you do, and being a being a voice of innovation for us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure.
Absolutely. Well, have a great weekend, the rest of it, and I hope that at some point we'll be able to bring you back on, maybe to talk about next year's winners.
I'd love to. Have a great weekend, too.
It's wonderful. Thank you. Have a great weekend. Take care. Thank you.
Bye.
That was Rob Green from Dyson Corporation talking to us about innovation and innovative individuals in Chicago and throughout the world. Really, really cool stuff, man. That was really neat. As you could tell, I'm sure there's just so many neat things. And if you go to the JamesDysonAwards.org location, I'm having a tough time speaking because there's just so many really neat things. My mind is bubbling with these ideas. We are right at the end of the hour, though, man. This always happens. We get somebody really cool and interesting like Rob on, and I just can't keep to the schedule. I had a plan to give you a whole bunch of cool sites, but I'm going to leave you with just one. This is related kind of to what we're talking about here. We're talking a lot about vaccines and how unbelievably vital vaccines are and vaccinations are. Please get vaccinated. Please get your immunizations. There's a great website you can go. It's called flushot.healthmap.org. If you're not sure where to go to get your flu shot this year, go to flushot.healthmap.org, and you're going to find exactly where to go. You're going to find where you can get it for free in many cases, all sorts of place. It's a really good site. You just enter in your address or your zip code. It'll tell you the closest places for you. Like I said, go get those vaccines. Go get those immunizations and flu shots. Definitely worthwhile, not only to protect you yourself, but really it's important to protect everyone around you, particularly those people that are unable to get vaccinated because of their age or because of their immune system issues and other things. This is why we do it, is to help everyone around us. So go do that. I am going to leave you right now with a podcast only song of the week, a song only of the week. It's not even podcast only. It is radio ready. This one is called Le Goudron. It's an edit for the radio. It's by, the artist is Yacht, and it's just a great kind of jamming song. I'm going to leave you with it. Thank you so much for listening to us this week on Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois, and shouts out to Dyson and to Rob Green again. Thanks again for just a great, great show. Have a great weekend, everyone, and we will talk to you next week.
Couvert de confetti, le temps est un bateau, la terre est un gâteau. parti vers le confetti. Le temps est un bateau, la terre.